Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young and Brian Brushwood, who's going to go check on something, but he's here right now. Say hello, Brian.
Hi. I'll be right back.
And that's Brian Brushwood, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. So, Justin.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. So I did a little tease at the end of Weird Things for the Darker Path project, which you've been helping me out with. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't know, it's a longer form taking a scenario and stretching it out to an hour with a little more details and stuff. And then for the final product, bringing in an audio engineer to go in and add in layers and stuff. And it is a very, very different. It's one thing to say, hey, let's have a scenario on Weird Things and goof off for about 10 or 15 minutes and see where it goes. It's another thing to try to map out an hour of something.
Yeah, no, it's a big storytelling challenge for you, and really, it's not even like there's a whole lot of previous kind of material to go on or to model it after. I mean, the biggest thing that I would say would be like choose your own adventure / D&D campaign, but there's a lot of really interesting creative decisions that I know you have to make in terms of how on rails the world is, how much it's going to be free-flowing, how much you're improving. Like there's a lot of decisions, both long-term and short-term, that you gotta settle on.
Yeah, and for those of you who want to check it out, go to soundcloud.com/AndrewMain and you'll see it. It's a Darker Path beta. And the RPG thing's been brought up a few times. And one of my things I've commented on that, like, yeah, some of those different RPG stuff and diceless RPG stuff are really fun if you're playing, if you're watching it. It's boring as, and I've had to be like, oh, it's like this. It's like, if you ever try to watch one of those campaigns, listen, it's not, I don't want it to be like that because it's tedious. There is some stuff online, like Dan Harmon and stuff has done some cool D&D stuff where it's not about the game. It's about everybody riffing on everything sort of going around the sort of thing. And where we're trying to figure out is like, not to say, oh, this is original. We're saying it's like, it's a different thing. And I found in the two that we've done so far, they've both ran about hour 10, hour 15 minutes. I wanted to keep it under an hour. But at like the 40-minute mark, things really get going. And that's one, it becomes very entertaining. But that's not to say the first 40 minutes is entertaining. A lot of people like it. But I want to compress that. I want to get that thing going faster.
And part of that is figuring out, you know, what is the line between tedium and suspense,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is very much a storytelling question, where I think if you're going to draw the line between what you're doing and a D&D or a Pathfinder, and listen, there are plenty, you know, there are Twitch channels that are dedicated just to that, right? And there are some people that really, really like to get lost in watching people go through those universes. Mm-hmm. This is, in my sense, from the two times that you've done it with me, more like a evolved role-playing version I want to say choose your own adventure only because that's literary. But, mm-hmm. but you know, some kind of interactive literary sort of story. And what you've done with the audio production is to kind of make it far more like something like Radiolab than anything that has really kind of come out of our little coven of audio creators, which, have by and large really done more kind of radio panel present style, unedited stuff. Which is, I think is great. It's great to have that diversity in our family.
Well, that's thanks by and large to Ernie Hurtado, who's the guy who's doing the sound engineering on it. He does an amazing job on it. And so, for the answer to the question we had just in the chat room is each continuous? Like, no, each episode standalone because I want to be able to bring in different people and have them participate. And right now, I've been calling them beta episodes because I'm trying to figure out this format. It's like part of it I like, but part of it I go, man, this drags. How do I get from there to here? And part of that's me becoming a better storyteller and choosing things better, but it evolves.
Well, let me ask you about that then, because this is something that, along with all that sweet audio editing and all that production value, does come cost. It does come, you know, involving other collaborators. How do you plan to pay for all that, Andrew Main?
Well, the plan is I'm going to keep doing the first few out of pocket, and then at some point, if there's traction, if I think I've got the format, continue on and do a Patreon. That's going to be the goal to do it. And not like a high volume, like, oh, I need 1,000 per episode. Like, I'm just figure out what the costs are to keep having an audio engineer do that and keep it going and just start it there, just so it's not a thing that I do when I feel like, oh, I want to spend a couple $100 on this episode. So that's my plan. What's your guys' advice on as far as launching Patreons?
Build value first. The best metaphor I've heard is that your value with your audience is, think of it in terms of a bank vault. When you give content to them, when you build your brand, that is filling the bank vault up. And when you make a sale or get people to subscribe to a Patreon, you are taking a withdrawal out. And it's perfectly fine to withdraw money from the bank when there's money in the bank. But the mistake people make is they're all like, well, I need to start a business. So let me start by getting, you know, $10,000 out of this bank vault that doesn't have anything in it right now. So I would probably recommend, I don't know. You have a considerable amount of brand value from your other stuff as well, but I'm a bigger fan of, like the Modern Rogue, we've toyed with the idea of doing a patron model on that, but I feel like we're not even a year old, and I feel like we haven't provided enough value to start asking for anything yet.
Yeah, but that's also a thing that exists in a venue where it's ad supported. So there's income going into it, you know, already though. And so I say to step it up with a Patreon obviously could be a thing to do, but it's not like every episode is just costing you fully out of pocket. It was initially, you know, but
sure. But my point is, people have to know what they're buying. And
oh, I agree. And that's
even
that's
at nearly a year, I don't feel like we've quite figured out what
is. The plan is I'm not going to do a Patreon and say it's going to happen after that. The plan is keep putting out episodes and then say here's a Patreon after a certain point if we want to keep it going. As I don't expect anybody to just like, oh yeah, I'll give you my money for something I never heard. That'd be stupid. The point is just saying how do you build up to that? How kind of runway do you do? And you know, and. You know, the goal is also to set a very low, like, this is what it needs to do. This is not like, hey, I'm going to set basis number on how to pay my mortgage. You know, I'm going to be like, no, this is what it costs per episode to do this, not including some talent fee for me or anything like that. It's like, literally, this is what's coming out of my PayPal account to make this thing happen.
Yeah, I mean, but to what you were saying, Brian, I know that we've definitely given advice in the past about, like, you know, for Patreon, sometimes it doesn't hurt. I mean, I think it really... whether or not you want to set up a Patreon really depends on how much your relationship with the Patreon is going to be, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to lean heavily on it, then yeah, you should have, like, if you're asking, hey, this is an important thing for me, please consider donating to it, and you're going to do that kind of plea up front or in the middle of the show or where it's, like, big and in front of people, then that's one thing. But if you know, I've always kind of been along the lines of like, you know, I was late to Patreon. Brian tried to sell me on Patreon a year before we wound up doing one for Night Attack. And I thought that it was going to screw with the audience and I was not for it. I was wrong. I was loud wrong. Patreon as a platform has changed my life. Now, what have I learned from that? Part of it is that don't feel ashamed about setting up a little net. Right? If Patreon is just a net where people who are your mega fans who without you prodding them just want to throw a few, a little support your way, then I don't think it's bad to have it. But I do think that to Brian's point, if you're going to lean heavily on it, then, you know, you should not do it hoping that fans appear. You should do it knowing that there will be a crowd that is going to look at that as a rallying cry and say like, yeah, awesome. Like we get to support this person that I care about in need. What I think is interesting about your situation is that it's almost in this second level of Patreon, right? Because Patreon comes out and now all of a sudden there's a lot of either established or semi-established properties that had not been monetized in that way that now all of a sudden have a place where they can go, and it's got brand value, and no one's afraid that it's going to go away tomorrow, and creators aren't worried that the checks aren't going to come. Now it's this institution, right? But in the same way that Kickstarter started as kind of one thing, and then by way of it being used in the process, sort of you found different permutations of how to run them and what were best. What I think is interesting about this project for you, Andrew, is it can almost be more like a Kickstarter. Like, you could just say, hey, I've taken out X amount of money, and that's going to go toward, I've talked to my audio engineer, we're going to do X amount of episodes. Here's what it costs for an episode to have go forward. Right now, we are at episode 6 of 8 of our limited run series. If we get to this number, then they'll keep going. If it drops below that number, then we'll stop. And either it's a limited run and everything's free, or people dig it to the point where it's a regular thing. And now all of a sudden people made their new favorite podcast happen because they turned a limited series into a regular thing. They turned a backdoor pilot into a series. They turned their favorite movie into a sequel and a franchise, you know? I think, like, that to me is the most interesting way to look at launching something on Patreon, because you're at no point is it ever really, like, a sad thing. Either it's going to be a limited series and you declare victory and go home, or it's a show and the amazing people that sprung up around it made it happen.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it wouldn't be worth it to split it into kind of two campaigns where launch it, you know, do a Kickstarter type thing. Is like, look, if we can get $2,000, I could pay this audio engineer to do 10 episodes of this thing. And, you know, here's what the betas sound like. Season one will be 10 episodes long. Hope we make it. And then you make it or you don't. And my guess is you'll blow past whatever that number is. Then you do it. And then now everybody gets it and loves it. And then the story becomes, and guess what? We could have it forever. If you like it now, you know, just throw something on the Patreon.
Yeah, it's an interesting approach. You know, I'm still trying to figure this thing out and figure it through. Because, like, I look at it where, if I cover the cost of the episode of just that part, I'm happy, because for me, part of the reason why I got excited about Darker Path is I'm trying to do things that are very much on brand for Andrew Main as a writer, you know, Andrew Main and writer. And I have a lot of ideas or a lot of great ideas, you know, podcasts and stuff, but I want to do something that's going to be, hey, I like the way this guy tells story. I like this way that he does this. I want to check out his books, you know, and that's kind of the goal, is like, let me create a podcast that does that, that can have fun content every week. And that was sort of, that's where this came from, was how to do that. And so, you know, it's like, yeah, if I can figure out a way to just cover that real cost, I'm happy, you know.
So. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I will do one more plug here, if I may. Authorpage.com, we're getting ready to bring in our first big wave of beta users. We've had some people on the site testing it out. If you go to authorpage.com, you can see what I've been working on. This is a free author website for authors. We allow you to list your books, post short stories, blog, do a lot of other cool stuff, and some other features to be announced. And so far, the reception's been fantastic. If you click on, if you scroll down there, you'll see like an example of my page. You can also, if you go all the way to the bottom, you'll see an example of just, we've just started listing authors. And I think we've only have like myself, Peter, and somebody else has done that. But if you go to authorpage.com, you can see the 11 things that it does for you. There's my page and Peter's page there. There's a video. And just, you know, we're trying to make it very easy. If you have a book, or even if you don't have a book, let's say you just want to start by writing short stories, Author Page is a great way to do that. You can post your short stories there, send out links that provide people this really easy to read format that looks like book print. I'm actually working on a new version of that that's going to have pagination for longer stories, and it simplifies it. To change things and do updates, it's so quick. I've got a stats panel in there. So when you log in with your account and you want to see how many people visited your site in the last hour, it'll tell you. How many people looked at a book, it will tell you. How many people read your stories, it will tell you. There's nothing better than doing a social media campaign and actually knowing if people went in there and looked at what you had to say. So right now, Brian is clicking through on the site, and if I click on stats, I can see right now in real time that he just clicked on, I think, a secret identity. So that's one of the things. We also allow you to plug in for more techie stuff if you want to do Google Analytics and to see how much time people spend reading something. I found that promoting your stuff is a pain. Promoting your stuff is a pain in the ass. This makes it very, very easy to do this, because what happens with this is that when you put something out there, hey, everybody, I've got a short story, and you go look and you see people click on it, it's encouraging. You want to do it again. You want to send out another post the next day. You want to put more stuff up there, and you want to share the stuff. So that is authorpage.com. It's a project I've been working on with Peter J. Wax. And you can check that out. We're going to try to do, I think, on Saturday, a live stream where we're going to give out the beta invite codes to everybody who has been so far, you know, signed up for that. And we're going to allow them to go do that. And so this is a fun project. Again, no immediate path to monetization on this one other than we get the affiliate link codes. But it's just been like, man, this would be a really cool thing. I can make this so other people can use it. And it's free. It's going to be free. All the features I'm saying, like if you're beta, you get in there, it's free. I have no plan to flip this into now you got to pay per month. Our goal is to always figure out how to help you move books and sell books and then make money that way.
What's been the biggest feedback you've gotten?
Biggest feedback, I mean, other than, you know, the profligate number of little glitches and stuff like that I have there, has been the short stories.
The biggest feedback has been, fix this.
Yeah, and it's good, though, because you need people using it, because there are thousands of lines of code here, and sometimes people are like, oh, well, the CSS things there isn't working. Like, yeah, it needs to be fixed, but, like, trust me, that's a minor thing compared to what I'm dealing with on the back end, but it's been super helpful, so... The feedback has been very, very helpful. People love the short story function, and that's been a great way to drive people to a site. It's a great way to say, hey, come check out my reading or check out what I have written. And then we're going to do a lot of work in increasing the turnover from people going from to your page and then clicking on to follow you on email and do this other stuff. There's a lot of work that's going to be doing and trying to engineer do that. But the way it works is when we figure out, hey, this is the best call to action to get people to sign up for your email, everybody will have access to it. Hey, this is the best way to create a call to action at the end of a story to get people to click through to look at your books. And right now I'm designing a thing to insert into your Kindle books. If you write books and put them on Kindle and other ebook platforms, what's the best call to action to get people to go to your homepage? And so we're doing that. Actually, our friend Dr. Paul Zach, we've been talking to him a little bit about how do we encourage this sort of things. So we're putting some deep science into this stuff. So that's the author page project.
If people want to get involved, are you still accepting beta people?
Go to authorpage.com and sign up right there. That's the way to get on board our beta. So,
and you put up a few short stories over the last few days, right?
Yeah, I've been posting short stories, and the response has been, you know, fantastic as far as the number of views on those things. It's absolutely exciting to see that, because then you see people go through the short story, then they click over to look at your other books, and the next thing you know is you're building up your fan base. So that's been really cool, and it continues to evolve.
Right on, awesome. Man.
Authorpage.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's at.
Anybody have any picks? Any picks?
Man, I'll tell you what, it's always nutty. Normally, I'm pretty good on the picks thing because I'm always, you know, trying to work out and read more stuff. But this time, boy, going out and doing Dragon Con sure does throw your schedule for a loop. Turns out Dragon Con's my pick. It's the Con of Dragons.
On Netflix?
oh, you know what is on Netflix is Narcos season 2 just dropped, and it looks good. I started watching it last night, and then I fell asleep. But it's pretty red.
Well, Brian, it's actually that's a dad review. That's a dad review. That's fine.
It's based entirely on my deep, deep affection for season 1. I thought the first season was tremendous, and the second season, it's just a direct continuation of the story. It appears to have had no missteps from what I've seen so far.
Nice. My pick is Brian Brushwood for letting me go on stage as his unannounced intermission during Dragon Con to do what I thought was going to be a very boring and frustrating 3 minutes for the audience, where I would jackknife all of the well-earned energy that Brian had created in the room and turned out far better than I expected.
Well, and this is a good thing to talk about on After Things, because there's a lot of times where, you know, you're goofing around with a friend and you may have an idea to do a thing. You're like, oh, you know what would be hilarious is blank. I'd say for every 99 to 999 times those things get said, there's maybe one time that they actually get done. And this was definitely one of those times. We had made a joke about an all setups magician, no payoffs, no actual magic effect, nothing but the process of magic over and over and over again, done with over enthusiasm and energy. And man, I'm so glad that not only that you did it, Justin, but that we thought through the right way to prime the audience to such a ridiculous notion.
It was, you know, again, it's so. It's one of those things where, like, if somebody were to mention doing that, like, on After Things, we'd probably tell them, no, don't, for the following 90 reasons. Like, the idea isn't as funny as you think it is, and, you know, they're there for you and everything. They're there for Brian. Like, so you don't want to do anything that's, you know, in any way makes them feel like they are getting cheated, you know, so you can screw off.
Yeah, I guess that's on paper. You're right. On paper, the idea of going on with an untested, unproven idea that actively subverts the stated reason why they're there. They're there to see a magic show. So to put on a guy, they're there to see Kurt Anderson and Brian Brush would get on stage and do magic. And so to throw someone who is neither of those and also not doing magic and also doing something that has never even been attempted before, just farting off. That's some high stakes poker.
but it wound up working out, and it was funny because unbeknownst to me, our friend Andrew, Carl, old Carl Coppertop,
Carl Hein,
was in the audience. I didn't know he was even at Dragon Con, but him and I believe John Armstrong were in the audience, and he had some very, very. I ran into him on the Marriott floor on Saturday night. He was dressed as the Green Arrow, and he had some very, very nice things to say, and he was very pleased with it because he's like, well, like I was dying because I thought like that would kill at a magic convention because magicians, like there was a lot of very like in magic sort of in jokes of like the overuse of like applause lines, like, hey, give this person a round of applause, like when they when everybody stands up or stands down, the like, you know, well, do you want to change, or is it good, or is it fair, or do you want to change, is it fair, do you want to change, like just like a lot of that magic stuff that magicians were into. But he's like, yeah, I was blown away that layman like would find that level of like nonsense funny. So That was very, very cool. It was cool to see it happen, and it was refreshing to take a risk like that and have it not just be a total failure.
Well, we also, good. I mean, I think we built up a framework where if you smelled disaster, you could have pulled the ripcord at any moment and gotten out of it.
Justin just runs off the stage crying.
But that was part of the trick, was like, well, how do we set it up? And so we set it up as me saying that, you know, oh, my, you know, how many of you guys know I have a comedy podcast with Justin Robert Young? Well, Justin says he saw this magician and he was hilarious. I've never seen him, but let's give him a try. Please welcome a name suspiciously close to Justin Robert Young. And then and the idea was the moment he felt like he was losing the audience, he could pull the plug and we could go back to my show. But instead, man, it was electricity. I'm sure you've been in the room at stuff like that where it's just like everybody could kind of feel something happening. It was great.
So, I mean, at least I know that I could always be the world's worst magician. So
where would we see this?
It's on YouTube. It's on. I'm sure somebody in the chat room can throw us the YouTube link. But yeah, it was super fun. I thank Brian for co-conceiving and giving me the spot to do it.
Yeah, thanks for that, Brian.
Yeah, look what you've done. Yeah. You can't take that back.
Great. Awesome. Gentlemen?
Yeah.
We all good? Mm-hmm. Anybody need to pick? Anybody good pick? Everybody good pick?
I think we have all got picks.
My pick is the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Fantastic. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.